From me, Rob Cowan, for this Sunday morning, thank you so much for joining me, and I do hope you'll join me again next Sunday, same time, 9 o'clock, for The Spirit of Schubert and some truly great recordings.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones. In an hour from now, Lucy Skeeping will be here exploring the tender art of the lullaby from ancient melody to Elizabethan song in the early music show at 1. But next today on Radio 3, with the time at midday, it's time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
I'm in the Midlands to meet the Austrian international footballer Paul Scharner, who plays for West Bromwich Albion in the Premier League. He's also played for Wigan Athletic and made a huge impression before that, playing top-flight football in Norway. So I've wanted to meet him for a while because I've always heard about his love of music, and there's a happy coincidence in that it marries up with BBC Sport Relief. So this made this an opportune moment. And I think you're keen, Paul, that people should take part and should run 1 mile, if not more. And I imagine any professional footballer, but somebody with your sensitivities, Paul, would be very keen to endorse Sport Relief.
Yes, first of all, hello all together to the audience. And that's for sure. I think it's a very best coincidence because, first of all, you raise money for vulnerable people, you know. Secondly, you do some exercises and help yourself and your body. And hopefully I can do my mile anywhere.
You probably do a good mile, don't you, once you're playing in a match?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it should be a mile in high intensity because it's very... analyze the game in modern football, and in midfield you run around 11 kilometers.
And recently you picked up an injury, so you missed this rather wonderful defeat of Chelsea.
Yes, actually I came back from injury playing the Wolves, and I got injured again, and I'm out since the Wolves game, but absolutely decent form at the moment from my colleagues and from the team, and I'm really happy for them to continue the positive run.
I know the supporters are very keen on you, not least because you managed to arrive and score a couple of very important winning goals.
Yes, I have always a good connection with the supporters, also in my former teams and clubs where I played. And I think it's a giving and a taking, you know, because football is not interesting without supporters. And football is not interesting without the players. And that's why I think there is a big connection between the two sides.
I rather imagine, well, actually, Paul, I know, that we have been hard-pressed to find Premier League footballers who listen to Mozart and classical music. Do you think possibly that, coming from a European background, and Austria in particular, that you're much more open to music? You could be a leading sportsman in Austria and it would not be odd to have had quite a rich cultural experience.
That's definitely, especially in Austria, because there is not just the classical music, also the folk music is a big part in the German-speaking area, also Germany. Actually, they were very surprised when they first met me in England and I said, I listen to classical music. And they said, what is he doing actually? Is he a musician or anything like that? But in continental Europe, it's quite normal to listen to all kind of music.
If you're in the dressing room, do you sometimes listen to Mozart or something?
With my earphones, yes.
And do they ever say, what are you listening to, Paul?
No, not really, because the normal stuff in the dressing room is R&B or anything like that, you know, and it's totally different. But most of the time, actually, I listen it at home, you know, in a relaxed position and just let the emotions out, what the music is bringing. Yeah.
In fact, you learned the piano as a child.
Yeah, actually keyboard. I learned a few different instruments. I started with the flute, then moved on to keyboard, and at the end I ended up with the drums. But my main focus, also when I was a child, was football, and that's why I hadn't enough time to exercise and training the instruments.
We'll come on to some more about the football in a minute, but I imagine that playing the piano would make you particularly fond of the Mozart piano music. Because, of course, Salzburg is... didn't you play for two teams in Austria, I think?
Yes, yes. I played in Vienna for Austria-Vienna and in Salzburg for Austria-Salzburg. And, yeah, I think Salzburg is the main city in Austria, especially because of Mozart's birthplace. And, I'm quite connected to the music of Mozart, especially to the piano. And, that's why I chose also a title. I think the main composer in Austria is Mozart.
Thank you.
The first movement, the Allegro of the Mozart Piano Sonata in C, Kirkel 545, played by Mitsuko Ushida. Listening to that, Paul, maybe you played that, I don't know. I did when I was learning piano. I wondered whether you think there's any kind of connection in one sense between music and football, which is that in both, a really great technique allows you to do so much more.
Yes, and of course, actually also the training attitude, because I can imagine, especially a piano player or any musician, a professional musician and a professional sportsman, you have to train and train and train to get to perfection. And I think that's what also I have always in mind when I listen to that kind of music, how hard they have to train to get that good.
People often talk when they're coaching, and I know you have, from a very long way back, a person who works with you as a sort of personal trainer.
Yes, as a career coach. And actually, I started with some autogen training quite early. I was 15, I can remember. And from there on, my opinion was you can achieve more together than alone. And that's why I was very lucky to meet Valentin Hobel, my personal coach, when I was 19. And since that, actually, yeah, we're working together and keep the career going.
When I speak to really good tennis players or footballers or rugby players, they talk about muscle memory. You know, that thing of somehow getting into your body, a way of moving and the things which actually, once you master it, gives you very much more fluidity, and it makes things look effortless, doesn't it, in a strange way. If you see a violinist or a pianist playing, they don't seem to be working very hard, and in the same way with a tennis player or a skier, that thing of being able to effortlessly go through a movement.
Yeah, that's the instinct, what you have trained actually to don't think about, because if you think about, you're losing time, and maybe that's why you're getting short, you know. But my opinion is you have to train your brain as well as your body, you know, because if you're not strong enough in your head, then it doesn't matter how good or how strong is your body.
I've often wanted to ask a footballer of your sort of distinction this question. You know, in a lot of the other sports now, they have Hawkeye in tennis, and then they have an extra match official in rugby. Do you ever think, because I watch Match of the Day, for example, and I see all of these really important games depending almost on some penalty decision.
Yeah, everybody can remember the game Germany against England at the World Cup 2010 in South Africa, because it was at the equalizer and the game could be run totally different. And that's why I think it's time now to choose the modern technology also in football.
Now, of course, being Viennese, I dare say the New Year's Day concert in Vienna is something you're very fond of, Paul Sharma.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why actually my second favorite composer is Johann Strauss, the second, and of course Johann Strauss the first. And it's one of the biggest classical events actually in Austria and maybe also in Europe. I love the music, and it's typical Vienna music.
Which piece would you like to hear?
Of course, I think Unter schönen blauen Donau, the Blue Danube, that's the main waltz on earth, actually, and that's why.
And of course, it's just a wonderful tune.
Absolutely.
The Blue Danube by Johann Strauss II. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Carlos Kleiber. Talking of conductors, Paul Scharner, I can't help thinking that probably the closest you get to that, well, apart from your captain, is your relationship with the manager. And I wonder whether you ever find yourself at odds with what the manager wants you to do and what you feel you naturally can do and the position you're best at.
Yeah, I think from the manager's view, you can introduce your philosophy, your tactics, your system. But at the end, as a player, you're staying on the pitch and you have to compete against the opponents. And that means there is also a bit of individuality necessary to win or lose. And that's why I think the main influence of the manager is during the week, set up for the game, and then send the players out and wait and see.
Because you've played both in defence and in the midfield, haven't you?
Yes, you can say it's half-half. I played half centre-back and half centre-mid.
So when there's a corner and the taller guys go up, do you look forward to that moment to have a crack at goal yourself?
Yes, of course, I'm one of the tallest guy. But anyway, I like to score goals, and it doesn't matter if from a corner or anywhere else.
It must be an amazing feeling when that crowd erupts when you actually manage to hit the net.
Yes, that's the main point in football, you know. You can't win without scoring a goal. That's why all the strikers get the pride. And the defenders, yeah, they are just the still winners.
So tell me a bit about how a week would normally look if you're fit for a Premier League player. I mean, you play on Saturday, and then when do you start getting back together again?
Normally we have Sunday off to come down from the game and relax. Then in on Monday, the first time. Normally, I'm in around 9 o'clock. I have my breakfast and starting to prepare for the training. It's 10:30 start for the training. Normally, it's more of a recovery session because the second day after the game, it's the hardest one because the body is very exhausted and you just try to get ready for the rest of the week. And then have a massage and all the treatments to get ready for the Tuesday training. Tuesday training is normally the hardest one. Near the end of the week, you just have to settle down and save the energy for the game. Mm-hmm. That's actually during the season. It's totally different in the beginning of the season when you still build up your fitness. Then normally it's Wednesday off, then back in on Thursday. Training and on Fridays also the meeting and analyze the other team and the final training is more relaxing and have a bit of a fun and get ready for the game and Saturday is then the game.
It must be very frustrating when you have to sit on the sidelines during a match and can't play either because you've not been selected or because there's a slight injury.
We are in a quite lucky position as a footballer because we have every weekend competition, or nearly every third day we have competition. It's totally different to an athletic or to a swimmer, you know. They have to train and until the tournament is coming. But we as a footballer, every weekend we have a game. And of course, then if you're not involved directly from the first minute, then you have to keep focused and just wait for the right moment and take the chance.
We were talking about technique and how important that is as the basis of achieving anything. And I think that with the next instrument that is featured, the horn, it's actually one of the most difficult instruments to play. So the technique is absolutely vital.
Yes, and what you said, the training, you know, you need to train hours and hours and hours to play the next instrument as professional as possible. And it's quite similar in sports, you know, without training, you never get to perfection.
We heard Jonathan Williams playing the horn in the Mozart Horn Concerto No. 4 in E-flat, Kochel 495, of which that was the Rondo, the third movement. The Chamber Orchestra of Europe was conducted by Alexander Schneider. We're partially doing this programme at this moment because of the connection with Sport Relief. And there's not only the run on the 25th of March, but there's also a big television programme on the 23rd. And I imagine that if you are playing football at the level you are, you must always want people, in a sense, to understand the benefits of sport. And, of course, in this case, it's creating money for a very important cause as well. But the thing of getting people to take exercise and to feel good about their bodies, because you do that at such a high level. I mean, everything you do now in sport as a professional footballer is incredibly controlled, isn't it?
Yes, and that's what I want to say is the benefit for yourself, you know, when you do exercise. I've seen a magazine on television and it says it always helps to develop the brain, you know. It's not just the body movement, it's also to open your brain for new things. And that's why it's absolutely a good event, the Sports Relief. Everybody can sign up for the runs, and it doesn't matter if you are very fit or not. You can choose between 1, 3, 6 miles. And for me, life without sport wouldn't happen.
Interestingly enough, scientists have shown how sport, and that's why people who jog, it's like a sort of fix. They almost need it, you know, because it produces endorphins and things like that. And music has some of the same effect, that it can actually affect the chemistry of the brain.
Yes, and especially the classical music. I've 1 hour a day on my couch, putting my favorite classics on and just relax and let the music float through my body and my brain. And most of the time I fell asleep because it's so relaxing, and it's quite similar with making exercise.
Have you ever wondered how it is that Vienna in particular was home to some of the really greatest names in music? I mean, we've already had Mozart and we're now going to have Beethoven. Do you think there's something in the psyche that makes, or that period that made such marvellous composers?
It must be, because when you look in modern times, we don't produce any very world-class musicians. And that means there must be something in it, that time when they composed the music. That's why we got the world-class music. But of course, at that time, maybe it was different, you know, because Mozart has also his difficulties. And he's now a big hero in Austria and through Europe, and it needed time to get there.
The Beethoven Violin Concerto we're going to hear. Why is this a piece that is very close to you?
Yeah, that's because of the violin, you know. It's just sounding like a voice in my head and my ears, and I actually choose my music. It has to be nice music and easy to listen.
But there is quite a lot of turbulence in Beethoven, isn't there? It's quite romantic and it's quite troubled sometimes.
Yes, and you can see his life actually in the music, because he lost his hearing actually at the end, and it must be very difficult for him when you are very successful and then you're losing your main instrument.
But this brings us back again to what you're talking about, technique, because he had it all in his head. Yes. He could write in his head even without hearing it come back.
Unbelievable. So he's nearly not understandable for me. But maybe it's quite similar to me when you wake me up in the middle of the night. I can play football.
Thank you. Isabel Faust was the soloist in that recording of the Beethoven Violin Concerto in D, Opus 61, the third movement. I imagine, from having read up about you a little bit now, that you take quite an analytical approach to fitness and to technique and all of these things, and you obviously have this great relationship with your sort of life coach. And in fact, I was rather amused to see that when you were working at one point with Steve Bruce, I think, he was rather amazed when you went in with a list of points that you would like answered about how he wanted people to play and how he saw the structure of the team.
I just was always quite prepared for the meeting with the managers, yeah, that's for sure. But what I said in the beginning, I think from my point of view, I decided that I need the support and also the acknowledgement of another person who worked over 30 years in this kind of work. And what I said also before is I think you have to really train your brain to get the best out of your body, because at a high level sport or high level music, it's a very fine line, yeah. Just a little bit what decides between victory and defeat. And that's why I'm very satisfied with the work. And me as a little Austrian in the Premier League, nearly 6.5 years, I think it's quite a good achievement.
And how do you get on with your current manager?
He's totally different, to be honest, to the others what I had in...
This is Roy Hodgson.
Yes, it's Roy
Hodgson.
He
always seems to be a very nice man, a very benevolent man in a way, but I'm sure he's tough as well.
Yeah, the most experienced manager what I had, because when I came to England under Paul Jewell, he wasn't that long in the business. Also, Steve Bruce wasn't that long. And you can see he has seen a lot in football, and he's very focused on his philosophy. And now it seems it really works, and Hopefully we can contain our winning run.
Yeah, because the pressure on managers is absolutely staggering, isn't it? We've just seen it, for example, at Chelsea. They seem to change every few weeks if there isn't success.
Yeah, because it's not football anymore. It's also business. And that's why in modern football, the lifeline of a manager can be very short. And if I look back on my footballing career, especially in Austria, over the 12 years I'm a professional footballer now, I had 28 managers. And that means, I'm also very experienced in that particular part to experience different managers. And I've seen a lot.
We're going to have a Norwegian dance next. And you chose this, why?
Because of my Norwegian past, to be honest. Yes. Because I've played in Bergen, and Grieg is from Bergen. He's a Bergenser, you say in Norway, you say Bergenser. And I like this title because it's, for me, it brings happiness. And also, I think back to my Norwegian time.
That was the Norwegian Dance, Opus 35, number 2, by Grieg, played by the Gothenburg Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Nemer Järvi. When you're on the field in front of those huge crowds, and you've played in some of, you know, the biggest stadiums in the world, both internationally and for your clubs, are you very aware of the noise around you?
It's quite similar to the music, to the classical music. I try to get in touch with my emotions, you know, and that's quite similar with the supporters and also with the cheering, because it could be also
distraction.
Yeah, it could be also deciding about winning or losing, because if you have your crowd behind you, then the team can play better.
That really is true, you think? So in other words, if you're in front of your home crowd, or you've got a large number of supporters, that really does make a psychological difference on the way you play?
It could be. Not always. It has to be a special moment. It's like the derbies, you know, when you play the Wolverhamptons and Aston Villas. Mm. Then there is always a special moment, and also a special game where it could decide if your supporters are staying behind you or not.
Now, Paul Scharner, There are moments on the football field that have a positively operatic feel. One thinks of the odd dive or reaction to a tackle and injury. I wonder whether opera is an area that you're interested in.
To be honest, not really.
You see enough of it.
But I never had time, actually, to really go in it. Mm. I prefer more than musicals, maybe operette. But opera is, it's quite heavy, to be honest. Mm. But there are also some very nice parts and music. And I think you need the time to get in it and learn about.
So what drew you to the Verdi, the Triumphal March from Aida? Is this a piece you love on its own anyway?
On its own. And football is about losing and winning. And this music, it means it's a big victory. And if you played poorly and lost, then, of course, it's a very, very sad and very bad moment. But if you played well and lost, then you think, if you continue and playing like that, then sometimes you will win.
Thank you. Does that stir the right sentiments in you to get you really moving well?
Yes, yes, especially the trumpets. It's opened my heart, actually.
Gloria al Egito, the triumphal march from Aida Act 2 by Verdi. We heard the chorus and orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Claudio Abbado. Well, both Paul Sharn and I would like to exhort you to take part in the run on the 25th of March. There are 17 flagship miles or venues, including Belfast, Cardiff, Glasgow, London, Manchester, Edinburgh. So there are lots of places where you can take part, and all the money, as with Comic Relief, goes to vulnerable people around the world. Paul Sharn, thank you for letting us hear the music that you love and that stirs you, and for endorsing Sport Relief.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure for me, and if I can help, of course, I do.
Paul Sharner was talking to Michael Barclay. You can find out more about Sport Relief on the BBC website at bbc.co.uk/sportrelief.com, including how to sign up to the Sport Relief Mile next Sunday. And there's an evening of entertainment and fundraising on BBC One this Friday, the 23rd of March. The next edition of Private Passions will be on Sunday, the 8th of April, when Michael's guest will be the actor Caroline Quentin. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. The producer of today's edition was Chris Marshall.
After spectacular increases in life expectancy over the last two centuries,
every day we live, we add an extra 5 hours to our life expectancy. Every decade brings an additional 2 or more years.
Radio 3's Sunday feature asks, what is the secret of a long life?
There is an underlying change in the way that ageing is revealing itself in our bodies. I think life is just generally better.
And is a longer life necessarily a more rewarding one?
And just how many performances of Don Giovanni come on stand? 1,000, 2,000, 2 million?
This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature, Immortal Dreams, at 7:45.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online. It's just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news now, read by Ian Skelly.
The Chancellor has said he'll use his budget this week to tackle stamp duty avoidance. George Osborne said it was completely unacceptable that rich people were buying homes through offshore companies to avoid the tax. Mr Osborne said the budget would be designed to help working people on low and middle incomes, but he refused to say whether he'd be reducing the 50 pence rate of income tax for the highest earners. Mr Osborne also announced he would be extending Sunday opening hours for shops in England and Wales during the Olympics and the Paralympics to try to stimulate the economy. The Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, has expressed concern, saying he wouldn't want to see Sunday trading laws relaxed permanently. An explosion in the Syrian city of Aleppo is reported to have killed a number of people. The blast is said to have been caused by a car bomb. The Syrian government said 27 people were killed yesterday by 2 bombs in the capital, Damascus. Libya has formally asked Mauritania to extradite Colonel Gaddafi's former intelligence chief and right-hand man. Abdullah al-Senussi, who was arrested yesterday, is wanted for alleged crimes against humanity. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has condemned the Iranian government's blocking of a website called UK for Iranians. The site was launched by the Foreign Office 4 days ago. An American teacher has been shot dead in Yemen. Officials said 2 gunmen opened fire on the man in Yemen's second biggest city, Taiz. A group linked to Al-Qaeda said it carried out the attack. The footballer Fabrice Muamba remains in a critical condition in intensive care after suffering a cardiac arrest. The Bolton midfielder collapsed yesterday during the FA Cup quarter-final against Tottenham. And the weather, the largely mild conditions in the north of the UK will continue into this evening with occasional rain. In the south of the UK, showers will die away and most areas will have a dry evening and night. But it will become chilly with frost for many areas and there'll be localised fog. That's the BBC News and the weather. It's now 1:03.
And it was read by Ian Skelly. Time now on Radio 3 for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
My sweet little darling, sing Lulla Lullaby, a gentle cradle song from Elizabethan England, possibly by William Byrd. And how perfect to have it accompanied by the smooth, homogeneous tones of a consort of viols. The singer there was Alain Zepfel with Les Éléments. It's not often on the Early Music Show that we aim to put you to sleep, but if you feel a sense of drowsiness coming on, don't worry. Today we're looking at lullabies of all sorts, and they do come in many shapes and forms, as we're going to hear, from conventional rocking melodies or religious chant to timeless folk song and more. So for the next hour, forget about the cares of the world, grab your teddy and drift off. I saw a sweet, seemly sight, a two-voice lullaby from the 15th century performed by the singers of Anonymous Four. Lullabies are common to all cultures, of course. Anyone who's had a sleepless infant will know just how effective music can be. Whether you're in a stately home, a suburban semi or a mud hut, the same rules apply. A rocking rhythm, a mother's voice and lots of soothing repetition. And these characteristics can even be found in this lullaby from Turkmenistan. Passed down from mother to child, its origins can be traced back some 5,000 years. It describes a mother's hopes and dreams for her baby.
verin ben beni alıntıra alıntık akıl fiyolar bir ıntık altmış başlı ağrıyım gelişire kalıntık dalıntık da fallayın kakın Mekke yollayın kakın Mekke dengelde Kabe yedik paylayın Kabe yedik az volta Akmanatlar teceli.
Traditional lullaby from Turkmenistan, from a BBC archive recording. I suppose generally we tend to associate lullabies with the 19th century, don't we? Romantic songs by people like Brahms, Schubert or Schumann. But long before that, composers were using traditional lullaby tunes for inspiration to create sometimes quite complex art music, particularly in 16th century England. The composer Anthony Holborn set lullabies in popular dance forms, pavans, galliards and so on. He was a courtier in the service of Queen Elizabeth. He was a lawyer and a great lover of literature as well as a musician. First, we're going to hear